morning to you. We're delighted that you're here on this first day of the week to worship the Lord and appreciate the good singing. I can already tell that Brother Voss is one of those preachers who can not only preach but lead singing as well. And we appreciate that very, very much. I want you to do something that might seem quite odd as we begin this series of sermons. I want you to pretend like there is no such thing as the Bible, that the Bible has never been written, it does not exist, there is no Bible. Just go along with me on this and think about some things, all right? No Bible. Someone tell me how it all began, how the world began. I want to know details. I want exact specifics. How did the world begin? Tell me. How long did it take? How did God do it? What about this question? Why did the world begin? No Bible, doesn't exist, so tell me why we're even here. What's the reason for man's existence anyway? Why did this world come into existence? And then third, how's it all going to end? No Bible, we don't have a Bible, so tell me how the world is going to end. Are there any details that we could give to someone about how it's all going to end? I want you to realize, of course, we do have a Bible. The Bible is here. Now, what would you think about this plan? Let's suppose we say we'll get rid of the Bible and we'll take 35 or 40 men in this room and we'll send them off into a place somewhere and they should come up with the following explanations. We want you to come up with an explanation. You 35 to 40 men, come up with an explanation of how this world came to be. Tell us exactly how it happened. And tell us why the world came to be and what the rules are for how we live on this earth. Things we should do, things we shouldn't do. And then tell us how the world's going to end. And when you finish this project, let us know what you've come up with and we'll publish it on the internet and tell the whole world that they're bound by it. What do you think about that plan? It's not a good plan, is it? Because the world's going to be saying, why should we listen to you? Uninspired people about how the world happened and why it happened and what's going to happen at the end and what we should do and should not do while we're here. The point I'm making to you this morning is, fortunately, I don't have to rely on your speculations. You don't have to rely on mine. I have in the Bible, as someone put it, basic instructions before leaving earth. This is exactly what I have in this book right here. It's my divine GPS system to get me from earth to glory. It will get me there every time. It will never give me bad directions. Now let's take three aspects of this and then show you how the Bible answers them. Number one, how did it all begin? How did it all begin? Does the Bible ever give us the answer? You heard it in the reading. By the word of the Lord were the heavens made and all the host of them by the breath of his mouth. For he spoke, it stood. He spoke and it happened. He commanded, it stood fast. Now, my Bible in Genesis 1 tells me, God said, let there be, and there was. I know that some people are absolutely troubled over something and think that they have to bow before so-called science and admit, well, you know, the scientists have proven the earth is billions and billions and billions of years old, and there's no way you can make the Genesis account fit with that. And so I guess we better find some ways to inject millions or billions of years into the Genesis record. Let's just put the time in there. Maybe there is original creation that God made in verse 1. And maybe he had to ruin that creation and start all over again. And that when he started all over again, he did it in 6 24-hour days. But that the creation he made in verse 1, it went on for millions or billions of years. And then God had to ruin that creation and start all over. That's the gap theory. I'd like to stand here and tell you there's not a Christian alive or a preacher alive that would promote that, but it's not true. There are some preachers who've actually taken that position. I know the gap theory can't be true because 1 Corinthians 15:45 tells me Adam was the first man, not some recreation of man after a lot of other men had lived before him. And so that's certainly not. And here's another reason why. Exodus 20, look at verses 9 through 11 of Exodus 20. The Bible makes it abundantly clear that God made the world and 6 days. Look at this, verse 9. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, The seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord. He says, don't do any work therein. Watch verse 11. For in 6 days the Lord did what? He made heaven and earth, the sea, and what's this part? All that in them is. If the gap theory is true, and there were millions and billions of years of men living on the earth and dying on the earth, and their fossils and their remains being embedded in the earth, then Exodus 20 and verse 11 would not be true. But Exodus 20 and verse 11 is true. It only took 6 days for the Lord to make heaven and earth, sea, and all that in them is. And let me ask you, why did it take a divine, powerful being 6 days? Is that because that's how long he needed for the project? You know, when I came in a couple of Augusts ago now and heard water running as I walked into our house, I knew I shouldn't be hearing any water running because no one was home. Where is this water coming from? I come around the corner, I look up, and there's a gaping hole in our ceiling. The water heater in the attic had decided to spill its contents into the living room and several other rooms. I've got contractors out there, carpet people, all kinds of... How long will it take to get us back to where we were? Well, it's going to require at least this much time for us to get the job done. Look, let me just ask you point blank something. Do you think God is capable, the God you worship, the God of heaven, is he powerful enough to create the world in 60 minutes if he wants to, yes or no? Could he have done it all in one 60 minute just like that? Yes or no? Is he that powerful? Well, sure. Could he have done it in 60 seconds if he'd wanted to? Well, you say, I don't know about that. Well, wait a minute. Can you make an eyeball? Can you? And so maybe we ought to bow to the wisdom of the one who can and did. I know he's capable of building a world in just seconds. Why did he take days to do what it only would have taken him 1 minute to do? Why? He did that not for himself. He did that for you, for me. We needed a time frame in which to live our lives. You know, evolutionists and scientists claim they can explain all these things. I'd like for them to explain this to us. Where did we get our week? Where did we get that? We can explain why a year is a year, but where did we get the week? That came from God. God's gift to mankind is a 7-day week. And when the Bible says that he did this on 6 days, I have no reason to take those days as being anything other than ordinary days because he's powerful enough to have done it in 6 seconds. Now, watch verse 14, though, because some people tell us the days in Genesis 1 were really millions and millions and millions and millions of years each in length, and that each day represents not just a 24-hour day, but millions and billions of years. If that's true, then please read Genesis 1:14. God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons, for days, and what? Years. Well, if days in Genesis 1 doesn't mean day, it means years, millions and millions and millions and millions of years, what would years equal, pray tell, in Genesis 1? Or maybe we just ought to let the Bible say what it says and take it at face value and believe that days are days and years are years, and that's what we need to do. Someone says, well, what about the age of the earth? You know, I don't remember the first preacher I ever heard to say this years ago, but Eureka, it was a moment of understanding for me, and I've always tried to pass it on because it helped me, and I hope it will help others. When God created Adam, if I take the Genesis account at face value, which I have every reason to do, when God created Adam, did he create him as a helpless little baby who needed a mama to nurse him to adulthood? Adam started out full grown, correct? All right, think this through with me. 10 minutes after God made Adam, he was a full-grown man, wasn't he? 5 months after God made Adam, he was a full-grown man, wasn't he? Technically, how old was he? 5 months old. Have you ever seen a 5-month-old that looked like Adam did 5 months after he was alive? Huh? You know what that means? That means that God built Adam with an appearance of age already built in, correct? If he could do that with Adam, for reasons we all understand, he needed to be ready for operation on the first day of his existence. Could he have done that with the universe? Did God create the universe mature and full grown, ready for operation on the day he made things? So there is the appearance of age, and there's the actual age. But what about all these fossil records and how they've proven that the fossils are this many millions and millions and millions of years old? I wish I were making this up. I'm not. This is the honest truth. You ask them, how do you know how old that fossil is? Oh, well, we know that by the strata of dirt that we found it in. Okay? Well, how do you know that the strata of dirt you found it in is as old as you claim it is? Because of the fossil we found in it. Wait a minute. You said you knew the fossil was as old as it is because of the dirt you found it in. That's right. You say the dirt is as old as you say it is because of the fossil you found in it? That's right. They're using one assumption to do what? To prove another. It's just circular reasoning. And friends, there's no reason for it. The only reason man would try to deny a creator is what Romans 1 says. They don't want to be governed by someone and told what to do. And so they've got to get rid of God, and they try every way in the world. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God, Psalm 14:1 and Psalm 53:1. My Bible tells me, and by the way, they need to explain this while I'm thinking about it. In this strata of dirt, where they claim is a fossil that has multiplied millions of years old, they also found a Civil War button from an army jacket. And in another place where they claim, oh yeah, everything in this strata of dirt, that's millions of years old. They found a fishing rod and reel. I don't think they were using that equipment even 500 years ago, much less that many millions of years ago. Friends, if you just take the Genesis account at face value, here's what it says. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Do you believe that? I do. So how did it all begin? God spoke it into existence. He commanded it and it happened. I believe that's true without any doubt. Now here's the second question. Why did it all begin? Why did God even make this place anyway? What's the purpose of it? Is it just some kind of experiment? No. Friends, I want you to go to the book of Ecclesiastes with me. The book of Ecclesiastes. And I want you to please notice that in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, the Bible says that Solomon was looking for why this world was here anyway and how he could get the most out of it. And unfortunately, Solomon was looking in all the wrong places at one point in his life. Look at Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 1. I said in mine heart, how ironic, the very man that had written Proverbs 3:5, trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not to your own understanding, is now admitting here that he was looking to his own heart for the answers. That's his problem. Now, what was your bottom line, Solomon? What did you want above all else? Enjoy pleasure, he wrote. That's what I was into, pleasing things. Things that would please me, pleasure. Like what? Verse 2, send in the clowns and make me laugh. He said, I said of laughter, it doesn't do any good. And because it doesn't last is his point. You can laugh for a while and then you face your realities. And there's got to be something more. So I tried alcohol. Verse 3. I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine. And yet acquainting my heart with wisdom. He said I didn't want to become someone that was just a slobbering drunk, so to speak. I wanted to maintain my dignity and drink alcohol and let it, titillate my sensibilities. And how'd that work for you, Solomon? Well, I turned something else. That didn't work. Verse 4, so I became a workaholic. I builded me houses, verse 4. I planted me vineyards. I made gardens and orchards and planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. And I had landscaped property with pools of water to water the wood. And you know what? I had servants. How many of you have ever said, I just wish someone else could do all this for me right now? Solomon says, I had that. If I wanted something done, I'd say, hey, go do this. They had to do it. He said, I had great possessions, verse 7, of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I had silver and gold and treasures of kings and provinces. If I got in the mood for a song, I didn't have to listen to my iPod. I just send in my singers. Send in my singers and let them sing a song for me live, right here on the spot. My concert. And he said, I had it all. I was great. I increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. And verse 10, how rich were you, Solomon? I could buy anything I wanted the moment I wanted it. Watch this. Whatsoever of mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. Now let me ask you, would you truly be happy if you could ever reach an economic point when you could buy anything you saw you wanted the moment you wanted it? Would you be happy if you could buy it right away? And those of us who are older know the answer to that. When I ask this question occasionally, young people listen more than we realize they do sometimes. And I'll see some of them when I say, would you truly be happy if you could buy anything you wanted the moment you wanted it? And they're like in the audience, that would be the greatest thing ever. And yet you and I know what? It's not all it's cracked up to be. Elvis Presley, did he have any money? Have any fame, any fortune? He did indeed. I remember vividly, on a Sunday morning, I preached a sermon and told the following story about Elvis. He was being interviewed and he said, sometimes I believe I'm the most miserable man on earth. And the interviewer was like, come on. You're miserable? What are you talking about? And he said, sometimes I believe I'm the most miserable man on earth. So on Tuesday night of that week, I went to visit this couple that had been there that Sunday morning. And they were very enthusiastic to see me, invited me right in, and said, come on in. And they said, now we had not been to church in 17 years, and the first Sunday we went back to church, you preached on Elvis. That was amazing. I thought it was amazing too, because I didn't think I'd preached on Elvis. I'd preached from the Bible and mentioned one thing about Elvis in connection to the whole verses that I brought out from 1 Timothy chapter 6. But I said, why did that amaze you so much? And she said, because Jean here is Elvis's first cousin. His mother and Elvis's mother were sisters, and I married into the family, and we used to live at Graceland. We used to live in the upstairs at Graceland. Now, I'm going to be flat out honest with you. I didn't say this to them, but in my mind, I'm thinking, bless their hearts, what kind of disconnected from reality people have I run into here that think they lived at Graceland? They pull out the photo albums. Here we are on the set of this movie with Elvis. Here we are at the holiday party. Here we are. They're telling me the truth. I told you all that to tell you this. Jean said, you really took me down memory lane Sunday morning. I said, how's that? He said, that interview you mentioned, I was in the room when that interview was conducted. Elvis would allow us to be in there as long as we just kept quiet and listened. He said, I listened to this interviewer ask him a question, and Elvis said, sometimes I think I'm the most miserable man on earth. He said, I wish you could have seen a video of this reporter trying to get him to take that back. This is supposed to be a piece that glorifies the life of Elvis and all that he has, and aren't you so happy? And Elvis was saying basically, no, I'm absolutely miserable. Well, how could you be? You're in a 20-plus room mansion. You have a private limo to take you wherever you want to go. You've got your private jet to whisk you away. You've got women that are very attractive screaming your name and saying, look at me. They would love to date you. You've got all kinds of money in your bank account. You've got gold, platinum records on your wall. A lot of people would like to be as miserable as you. Solomon says, you know what? Let me save you some time. Been there, done that, not all it's cracked up to be. Look at Ecclesiastes 2 and verse 11. I looked on the works, all the works my hands had wrought. On the labor I'd labored to do, behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit. There was no profit under the sun. It wasn't anything worthwhile or lasting. It's like grabbing for the wind and thinking, I caught it. Open your hand and show me what you have. And so you and I spend a lifetime to get some stuff. Yeah. And we've got so much stuff that we've got to put it into, some of it stuff, into a storage facility because we can't fit all of our stuff into the house where we live. And so that stuff, in and of itself, by itself, does it make you happy and fulfilled? Bottom line, it's all going to burn someday. 2 Peter chapter 3. All these things will be dissolved. The elements will melt with fervent heat. Verses 10 and following make that abundantly clear. 2 Peter 3. Yes, it's all going to burn someday. So why am I here? Why did this world get brought into existence? Not so I could get me some stuff, so that I could serve the Lord. It's Ecclesiastes 12:13. Fear God, keep His commandments. This is the whole duty, is italicized. It's a supplied word by the translators to help complete the meaning. But really, if you read it as it's just written, fear God and keep His commandments. This is the whole of man. This is the essence of what man is all about. To fear God and keep His commandments. So why are we here? Why did God make this world? So that we could live for Him in this world, so that we could live with Him in the next. And that brings me to the third and final point. How's it all going to end? I know what my job here is now. How's it all going to end? Well, I've just alluded to it. 2 Peter chapter 3 says, the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night. The elements will melt with fervent heat. The earth and the works that are therein shall be burned up. You mean my house that I worked so many years to purchase? Yeah. You mean my automobile that I love? Yes, sir. I went by in a gospel meeting in Piedmont, Alabama. Was probably, it looks to me like it's the biggest junkyard I've ever seen in my life. Cars, like you, acre and acre and acre and acre and acre after car of cars. Now, I don't know why my mind works this way. I guess yours does too sometimes, because you're Christians looking to another world. But I looked at there and I thought about all those cars, and they're rusting out and they're sitting out in the weather and they're completely exposed to the sun and the elements, and they don't look like they did when they came off the assembly line, do they? Let me ask you a question. Every time you drive by a junkyard, ask yourself or remind yourself of this, true or false. Every car sitting out in the junkyard field used to be someone's brand new ride. Right? Did you see my new car? No. Here, let me take you for a ride. There's nothing wrong with that. I enjoy it. And I love the new car smell. Really do. But it doesn't last. And neither does the car. Someday, the car you're now driving will be driven by someone you don't even know, perhaps, because you'll be gone. Or someday your clothes will be worn by someone you don't even know, because you'll be gone. Someday your house will be occupied by someone, perhaps, that you don't even know, because you'll be gone. And you say, are you trying to depress me? No, I'm trying to impress upon you and upon myself this idea. Therefore, I'd better make sure I'm ready to go when I go, because I'm not taking any of it with me. Though I toil for a painting rare to hang on my wall, I must leave it there. Though I talk it up and boast its worth, I must give it up when I quit the earth. I'm not taking it with me. J. Pierpont Morgan was one of the greatest financiers that Wall Street ever knew. When men from hundreds of miles around came to visit his remains there in New York City, one fellow said to the other as they were passing by his coffin, I reckon how much he left behind. And the other person said, he left it all behind. Well, you know what the first guy meant. He wanted a dollar value. What difference does the dollar value make ultimately? I preached a funeral in which the people walked by a casket for the last time, and each person put two brand new dollar bills, $1 bills, into the casket. Why would they do that? This loved one, when he was sick, used to say to them, you go home and get you some rest. Now, I'm not letting you stay at this hospital. You go home and get you some rest. Now, before you go, though, check my sock and make sure I've got my $2 tucked in there, because if they let me out of this place in the morning before you get back up here, I want enough money on me to buy a cup of coffee and a newspaper. So every night they check his sock, make sure, okay, yeah, you got your $2, you're fine. In case you get out of here before we get back, you can buy you a cup of coffee and a newspaper. Shows you how long ago this was too, by the way. I don't think you could buy that anymore for that price. I want to ask you, as they remembered this quirk about him, as they walked by his casket and they put this money in, if they put $2 million in the casket, would it have changed the thing? Preacher, come out here with me on my farm. See, over in this direction, I own as much as you can see of that land in that direction. Now, preacher, look over here. As much as your eyes can see in this direction, that's all my property. And if you'll turn back this direction, as far as your eyes can see, in a 360-degree direction, that land is mine as far as your eyes can see. And I guess he thought the preacher was really, really going to commend him over and over and over for it. But the preacher said, well, I guess that's great. He said, I do have one question for you. He said, how much do you own in that direction? And isn't that the question?
Yes.
Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon the earth. Why? They can be stolen. They can deteriorate. Lay for yourselves up treasures in heaven. They'll never be taken from you. And that's what I want to do, because this world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. That being said, I want to ask this question as I close. Since this world is going to burn up, where are we going to be? We're not going to be on the world anymore. It's gone. Well, Matthew 25:46, these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. It'll either be everlasting punishment or everlasting life. Now, what do I need to do to get... God gave me a GPS, and it's absolutely one you can trust. I'll close with this illustration. Some years ago, I was holding a gospel meeting in Kentucky. I got online Saturday night to look at the directions, okay? I know the church building address. I'll type it into Google Maps. I'll also double check that just to make sure by typing it into MapQuest. And I'll go to Rand McNally as the third check, and I'll even punch it into my Garmin GPS in my car as check 4. Well, I got up that morning and headed for the church building, fully confident that I was headed in the right direction. And then it says, you've now reached your final destination, and there's nothing but a clump of trees. I think, well, maybe the church building on the backside of the clump of trees. No, it was not. And I'd been foolish enough. I hadn't taken anyone's phone number with me. And so I didn't know who to call, have any numbers to call. And so I'm driving around completely lost and thinking, I'm never going to make Bible class. They called me finally. Brother Clark, are you all right? No, I'm lost. Well, where are you? I said, well, I just passed a sign that said such and such state park. Oh, Brother Clark, you're 35 miles from us. 35 miles. And so I said, well, I'm not going to make Bible class. I said, we'll sing till you get here. Now, I want to ask you a question. Did the people at Google and Rand McNally and MapQuest and Garmin all get in a room somewhere and said, let's get B.J. Clark. Let's show him a thing or two. We'll deliberately throw him off the scent of where he's supposed to go. It was not deliberate. Look, if one person has the wrong directions to begin with, and three other people borrow their direction from the one person, they're all wrong, aren't they? And friends, when it comes to getting to heaven, if there's one person you get directions from that says, well, just say the sinner's prayer and ask Jesus into your heart and believe that and you'll be saved. If they got those bad directions from someone else who didn't get them from this book, because friend, if they got them from this book, you and I would be able to find those directions in this book. We never find anyone told to pray the sinner's prayer to become saved. Never. I challenge you to show it to me. Where is it? It's not in there. Oh, but everyone does. A lot of people do things that are not right. They don't know they're doing wrong sometimes. Just like I didn't know I was going the wrong way, but I was still going the wrong way, wasn't I? Friend, God's GPS, His gospel plan of salvation, is that you accept Jesus as the only one whose blood can save you. You believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, or else you'll die in your sins. John 8:24, you repent. Acts 17:30 commands all men everywhere to repent. You confess His name, Romans 10:9-10, unto salvation, and you are baptized into Jesus Christ for the remission of sins, according to Acts 2:38 and Acts 22:16. That adds you to the church of Jesus, Acts 2:47. And if you've already done that, then wonderful. Are you still traveling the right road? You know, I can be traveling down the right road and then get off and never get back on. Some people have billboards trying to entice you to get off the road you're on so you'll visit their establishment. Look, God says, don't listen to all those satanic billboards trying to get you to leave the narrow way that leads to life eternal. Stay on the path and come see me, come live with me. How did it all begin? God made it. Why did he make it? So that you and I could live for him, so that we could someday live with him when this world is destroyed and we go to eternity. Whatever your need is, I pray to God that you'll do right and get right right now as together we stand and sing, won't you please?
Bring Christ your brother.